I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Hello, my name is Gary Mansfield, and this is a bonus episode of the Ministry of Arts podcast. Now, as ever, let's begin by banging these bongos. Hello and welcome to this bonus episode of the Ministry of Arts podcast, bonus episode number 25. The bonus episode is shorter than the regular episode and designed to target a specific subject, be it an exhibition, the artist himself, or any arty occasion really. If you think you'd like one as a promotion tool, listen to the message at the end of the podcast that'll tell you how to go about it. But anyway, back to today's episode. Today, I'm bringing you Art on a Postcard founder, Gemma Pepe. Art on a Postcard was created several years ago to raise awareness for Hepatitis C and to promote and raise funds for the Hepatitis C Trust. Art on a Postcard has grown from a one-off exhibition to do just that into, well, you're hearing this podcast, just how big it's got and the potential of how big it's going to be in the very near future. If you're listening to this episode on the day of release, which is the 22nd of February, tomorrow, obviously the 23rd, the Art on a Postcard auction opens. So while you're listening to this episode, I urge you to go over to the Art on a Postcard website, which is artonapostcard.com, or their Instagram profile, which is @artonapostcard, and just get the information to prepare yourself on how you can bid for an artwork. And that auction runs from the 23rd of February to the 9th of March. They do have a physical exhibition in London's Fitzrovia that sounds really exciting. It's got 7 curators. So please, come and join me as I spoke to Gemma Pepe from Art on a Postcard.
I'm already working with other charities. I'm working with War Child in April. Got a show with them, which I'm really excited about. And I've got... My father died last year and and the hospice nurses that came over, I'm doing so he didn't actually go in, but we got so much help from them, so I'm doing something for them as well. But I'm set up now to be able to work for the trust, with the trust, and give them, so that they benefit from what we do, but also other charities. And really soon we're going to have a white label white label auction software. Everything will be on our website.
Nice.
It won't go to outside to an auction house, but it will all be from the website. And I think then I think we'll sort of explode, and I'll definitely need other people in. And yeah, but at the moment it's a balance between needing to pay people and needing to give the money, get the money that we come in. Obviously we raise money for people, So yeah, it's a balance. So we do prints and we do other stuff so that we have core funding. But yeah,
I'm a trustee for a couple of charities, so I do have a little understanding of the workings of a charity.
Which charities?
Do you know Kersler Arts? It's a prison arts charity.
No.
It sort of runs along with what you're doing at the moment. They have a an exhibition each year. They have an exhibition of prison art each year that's held at the Royal Festival Hall on the London South Bank. This year, they had Ai Weiwei as their curator.
Oh, wow.
It doesn't really get much bigger than Ai Weiwei in the prison art realms, you know?
I'm really impressed how you got him.
Before, they've had Sarah Lucas, Anthony Gormley, Grayson Perry.
Those are really good names. I mean, that's kind of also, I know it's a bit selfish of me, but they're kind of why I wanted to work with other charities too, because some people are turned off by Hep C.
Yeah.
And I noticed that doing War Child, the calibre of artists I was able to get. I mean, not that we've had some brilliant artists for Hep C. I mean, don't get me wrong there. But, you know, then you'll get your artists that go, that's not my charity. So it's nice to be able to work with a variety of charities so that you can work with a variety of artists. What's the other charity you work with?
It's one called the 16 Trust. It's a small charity, a very fledgling charity, and it's run by Lee Cavalier. He's a curator.
Lee Cavalier. I'll look him up because I'm looking for curators at the minute.
It's just to broaden the horizons of school-leaving age people within the arts and just show them what's accessible, you know? The charity sector is a beautiful area to work in, but it does have its challenges, doesn't it?
It's a lot of challenges, mainly money, but yes, it is a good sector to get into. I was in music before. And I was an agent. I mean, I hadn't actually worked for a little while before I started at the Trust. I stopped work when my son was eight, and because I didn't really know what was wrong with me. I was always tired, and I knew there was something really going on, but I didn't know what. And I stopped work before I found out that I had Hep C. I went on a health kick before I found out I had Hep C. But so the difference between working, because I was an agent for British DJs, so I could literally go anywhere in the world and I held all the power. So going from that to always having your hand out and having to be the one like with nothing and going, could you please, was quite a leveler, actually.
I don't know much about hepatitis C, to be honest, but I mean, I don't know if you know my background, but I spent a lot of time in prison and it was pretty much rife amongst the drug users in there.
So rife, yeah. But if you weren't using, you couldn't get it. Yeah, that you're right. So basically, yeah, it's a blood to blood, and only blood to blood. It's not other body fluids either. Yeah. So kissing is fine and having sex is fine. It's just blood. And you'll get that with a blood transfusion, or you'll get that with using drugs. And I think the Trust, their challenge has been over the last few years is not so much, you know, finding the drug users with it. If you're a drug user, you pretty much know about hepatitis C. Not so much when we first started, but definitely now. I mean, you can't not.
Yeah.
But the people that the challenge to get to, where, and this is where Art on a Postcard is quite good, actually, is sort of the middle classes that went to university. They might have had an accident, or they might have used drugs once, which is really common. And it only takes that one time, with a needle. So contagious. It's just so contagious. It's much more contagious than HIV. And people said that's because it lives outside the body longer, but that's not it. It's because in a drop of blood, there is so many more copies of the virus than HIV. So it's very, very contagious. That's the challenge, is getting the people, because those people are in danger. You know, they're in danger of just suddenly dying because some people don't get symptoms. I mean, some people do. I did. I was one that got bad symptoms, but a lot of people don't, especially men. They even if they get symptoms, they don't go to the doctor. Got a brother that nearly lost his foot because he just wouldn't go to the doctor.
Because we know best, right?
Yeah, exactly. When he had COVID, he went into intensive care because he was fine. Do you know what I mean? It was anyway, I can't remember what I was saying now. That I lost my thread.
Sorry, that was me butting in trying to be funny.
No, it wasn't. It was me going on about feet. But men, basically, yeah. They often go to the doctor and find they've got 4 months to live. I mean, that is such a common story. And that's what, when we started the trust, I came in a couple of years later after it started. It started in 2002 and I came in 2004. But the common story was, oh, I've got Hep C, I don't know what to do. And, we'd just be advising people or helping them to get treatment. But the common story now is, oh, I've just found out I've got Hep C and I've got full-blown liver cancer and, end stage. And that's the common story these days. And it's quite often people that had a blood transfusion or, when they see something directed, an advert or, awareness directed at drug users, they think, well, I'm not a drug user. So, yeah.
Well, would I be correct in thinking that you got involved with the charity because when you was contracted, you couldn't find much help out there?
Well, what happened, actually, it was I met them because I was making a documentary.
Okay.
I was at doing a master's in documentary research, and I thought, I hadn't been long diagnosed and I didn't know much about it. And I thought we had to do a certain type of documentary. And I thought, actually, my disease will be good for this. It'd be a good chance to find out more about it as well. So then I met with the trust to do research, and then I realized, oh, this needs making. Because it was only supposed to be a research dossier. And so I went about raising the money for it. And the trust came in because we could raise money from the Wellcome Trust as a charity. I couldn't get it as a production company. I was working with a production company, but so the trust came in as producers.
Yeah.
So, and then when I filmed my treatment, and when it didn't work, and I said to Charles Gore, who was the CEO then, it hasn't worked. He was like, oh, because I'd got money from one of the drug companies as well. He was like, oh, dear. He goes, well, you can always come work for us, because he had this mad idea, and it is mad, but he's one of these people that was, with every mad idea, he has a brilliant idea, but this was a brilliant idea. So he said, he wanted to make Hep C the disease of the music industry, because so many people in the music industry have it.
Yeah.
But no one's going to take on a disease if they don't have to. And the thing is about the gay lobby was they had a voice and they had to. They had no choice. They had to. But also they were very well versed in campaigning. People with Hep C are not. They often have mental health issues and everything else that goes along with drug addiction. And if you are famous, that's not something you're going to shout about. It's not something you're going to, for starters, if you're in a band, it's going to your insurance will go up, and so it's not it didn't happen like that, even though I had a lot of fun trying. I mean, because I worked in music, my mates used to run festivals. Ziggy gave me backstage pass, so for my first campaign, which was What Not to Share, which was about don't use notes, don't share notes, because everyone knew that you couldn't you shouldn't share needles, but they didn't know about notes.
I didn't know about that till you just told me.
Right, well, we did some fun campaigns. We got backstage at festival where I was able to get Lily Allen, Brian Eno, Mark Ronson at the time. You can tell when it was because of But and also Manumission really took, because I've always gone out and worked in Ibiza a bit. My brother lives out in Ibiza, and so we've always been friends with that lot. And my other brother was a DJ, actually, so he used to DJ at Manumission. But they actually made little notes that and it would say share the love and not the disease, right? Because we weren't saying don't take it for a minute. I mean, we weren't preaching. We were saying, be careful. So, what we were worried about was not spreading the disease and, people that have got it getting help. So that was our, what we wanted to do. So people will take drugs, and it wasn't up to us to And actually, well, we all had Hep C, you know, all of us. So it, we weren't in a position to preach. So
brilliant. And what year was that, Gemma?
So that was the, so that would have been 2006, I guess. 2006. I did treatment all the year of 2005, so 2006. But then after Boy George actually came out of prison, I got really friendly with him, and we did loads of campaigns together. But one thing we did was we went into prisons and did prison radio. Mm-hmm. One of the girls at the trust, Layla, she was doing really into prison radio and radio, yeah. You know, but one of the things that we were doing with prisons was, you know, the prison radio. And George came in, and we went to Brixton. It was really fun.
Good fun, right?
Yeah, yeah. And the prisoners all produced. You mustn't, you know, you do work in prisons, don't you? Yeah. So you know it. They all produced, and it was of a really high standard and really good questions, and, you know, much better than some seemingly professional stuff. Really well thought out and really well done. So,
and was that your first experience with working with prisoners?
No, I tell you why we do so much work in prisons now is because we've got a new CEO, and she came from a women's prisons background. She was CEO for a charity that dealt with women's prisons, and so she knew there was definitely a need for it.
Yeah.
So we had peers going into prisons before she came along, but then she really was able to whip it into shape. Brilliant. And the work that we've done in women's prisons is phenomenal. I mean, I can't take any credit for it at all, because it's not been me. It's been, I do the art bit. There's a girl, Julia Sheehan, who's been doing it for a few years, and she's been phenomenal, because when she goes, she's been in prison. So, and so had Jane, who started, that particular part, you know, arm of the trust. So when they went in, they could talk at a level. So they really did get girls who would not talk to anyone or go, you know, or thought they were dirty or thought it wasn't something they could talk about, to not just talk about it, but get treatment. And then what the trust have done is then they were getting women on treatment, but then say they got released, they just get lost to the system. But now they've got, you know, they've done this whole follow-on program where they can't get lost. If they start their treatment in prison, then they can continue it. And research has shown that within a family, if a woman gets clean starters, if anyone gets clean, then clear, I mean, from hepatitis C, they're much more likely to go on and continue being clean.
Yeah.
But if a woman gets clean in a family, the family are more likely to, you know, she's more likely to stay clean. I mean, clear, if a woman gets clear from hepatitis C.
Yeah, yeah.
She's more likely to stay clean, but also women talk and the message gets, whereas a man might do his treatment and just be quiet about it and not sort of tell anyone what's going on, women spread the word and go, well, I did this and you can do it. And so it's a lot more people will benefit from women getting clean, actually, which is why they tackled the women's estate first. So
would it be the case that if a pregnant woman got Hep C, and then so would the baby?
No, not necessarily. You know, there's only a 5% chance of that happening. It's a very, very small percentage, but it is a risk.
Yeah.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
You don't necessarily share the blood, but we don't know if it crosses the placenta.
Yeah.
Or, you know, they could quite easily catch it at birth.
Yeah.
So, you know, when they're being born, cuts, and, you know, especially if they've got been born by via Von Tooth, your blood could mix.
You mentioned about you and your brother being in the music industry.
Yeah.
Was there creativity in home growing up?
Yeah, my dad was an artist.
Oh, superb. In what field?
He was a fine artist, painter and illustrator. Yeah, he went to the Slade, and he also, his bread and butter money didn't come so much from painting, although he did do commissions, but he did illustration.
Okay.
Yeah.
The latest art and a postcard auction starts on the 23rd of February. Could you tell us a little bit more about that?
So we've got seven curators, seven female. This is the first time I've done this. I normally do the whole lot myself.
Yeah.
And so it's been really nice having, because we're doing more and more and more, it's been great to have other curators come in and bring in some fresh art.
Yeah.
You know, names that I haven't known about before. So we've got Beth Greenacre, who was David Bowie's curator.
Oh, yeah.
So she was, I worked with her first at Albright when we did our first women's auction. She's the curator there. And we've got Lee Sharrock.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. And so we've got Molly Barnes. Her name on, you know, if you look her up on Instagram, it's She Curates.
Yeah.
Okay. And we've got Louise Fitzjohn.
Oh, I love Louise.
Do you know Louise?
Yeah, she's brilliant.
And so who else? Louise Liminal. I went there yesterday actually, because I'm doing a show. I'm starting AOP Gallery.
Oh yeah.
Because we've got a big database of buyers, and because we've also got a big database of artists, I just thought, oh, we can put the two together. Also, it when we go solo, it'll help to fund art on a postcard so that we can still, you know, raise money for charities.
Brilliant.
So so we're doing a show there, and in her tiny little gallery. It's really tiny, but it's really excellent, and her shows are so good. She really shined at Jealous.
Yeah.
She's really coming to her own, because every show is completely different and really interesting. So anyway, so we got Louise and Beckle Patty. Do you know Beckle?
No.
She's brought on some very interesting women, but she's another, you know, curator, PR as well. And, Carrie Scott.
Oh, okay.
I met her, during Photo London, because she was working with Nick Knight, but she's also responsible for the careers of all sorts of up and coming artists like Walter and Zoniel. And who else? I can tell you, there's so many names. Kim McCarthy and Bindi Vora.
Nice.
Yeah, so she's, and who else? Sandra, who works with me. I'm really sorry, that's my mum texting me.
You're quite all right.
So Sandra DeGiorgi works with me. She's been working with me for the last year and a half, and I thought I'd give her a little auction to cut her teeth on.
Oh, why not?
Yeah, she goes out all the time. She's always out at private views, and so she comes across lots of new artists, and I thought it'd be nice to, you know.
Brilliant.
So have I missed anyone out? I don't think I have.
So you have several curators. What is their role within the exhibition?
So each curator has curated their own little auction.
Yeah.
And each auction is going to run separately but concurrently.
Oh, okay.
So yeah, so when at the private view, you'll see all their shows. They all had to like get between 20 and 25 artists, and they've all really, I mean, the work that they put into this is brilliant, and the artwork is really interesting. And then the way the auction will happen, so it'll be online for 2 weeks, and then on the last day we'll stagger it. So
yeah.
Like I think Molly's finishes first, and then maybe Lee's or Beckle's. They're staggered each hour. They're staggered. So yeah, and they've each got, I suppose, about up to, you know, between 25 and 40 works in each one.
Yeah.
They're online at the moment. You can see them on our website. The Auction Collective is still, we're still putting that one together, but there's been some really good surprises. Like for example, Beth has bought she's my new favorite artist, Caroline Zermley. Have you come across her?
No, I've not.
She does these very kind of like, she does sort of glamorous women, sort of like, but little close-ups of glamorous women. That might be their cleavage, it might be their handbag, it might be just their eye, but she does it in nail varnish.
Oh wow,
it's brilliant. I mean, before I knew it was nail varnish, I was like, oh wow, she's great. But then, you know, seeing that it was nail varnish, like, whoa, this is amazing. So she's based in America, and when they turned up, she packed them up really carefully, and when they turned up, that was like, you know, when we have our auctions, it's like Christmas every day in the office. All this great artwork's coming in. And then who else? Jasmine Manbridge. She's in a couple, because a couple of them asked similar women, you know, the same women. So what we did was just like spread them across two auctions if they did that. So we've got Jasmine Manbridge, who I really like, got Sarah Berman, who we've had before, but I'm really happy to have again as well. Jill Rocker, who's a bit of an art and postcard favourite as well. Who have we got that's new, that's amazing? Well, Caroline Zermley. And sorry about all the paper. Catherine Acantra. I might have pronounced that wrong.
I don't know that
name. That she's also from Beth. I probably pronounced it wrong, but she's got work in the Tate. Well, Walter and Zonial. I've wanted to have them along for a while, but not, you know.
Yeah.
They haven't answered me, so that's really good. Got Anne Desmet, who's a Royal Academician.
Nice.
And again, she's another one. Oh, I know, Urim Goff. Have you come across her?
No.
She's actually a textile artist, but oh my goodness, her work is so excellent. It's really, it's very different. And she's painted on a postcard what she would do on her ceramics, ceramics are difficult to describe because they're just sort of like quite odd shapes, but with these really interesting sort of paintings on, but also you can see the pencil, they're very delicate.
Yeah, nice.
Yeah. And oh, Flora Bradwell, who's quite interesting, and Diane Chapley, who does these gorgeous like flowers, but they're lovely. And Elaine Wu McGregor, I particularly liked as well. Actually, Sandra brought her on along, there's lots to see. And I think what people say about art on a postcard is it always introduces them to so many new artists.
Yeah.
And this one definitely will. This introduced me to so many new artists. So, yeah.
And where is it being held?
At Fitzrovia Gallery on the 7th of March, 6 p.m. So put that in your diary.
And how long would a physical show be going on for?
I just put it up and take it down. Because we want to raise as much money for charity, costs so much.
Yeah, yeah.
And invigilators and all that. So we put it up. If you want to come and see it, you can come during the day or you can come at night to the private view. We make sure it's up for a day, you know, so people that can't make the private view can actually come during the day. But other than that, I can't keep it up because, it costs. And we just want to raise as much money as we can for the charity. So,
yeah, of course. But you can bid on them from the 23rd of February, right?
Yeah, absolutely. For 2 weeks. You've got 2 weeks. So, you know, you've got a lot of time there to browse the website, to look at the catalogue, to come along and see them in person. Because what I find as well is a lot of people, they think they know what their favourite is and then it changes when they see
them. Yeah.
So, yeah.
I do have a few set questions, Gemma, and it's, funnily enough, it's pretty relevant to what we're talking about. If you could have five artists, past or present, to have in art and a postcard, who would that be?
Okay. So, that's a really good question. I mean, I could be really... Right, let me think. Okay, a cubist, probably. I mean, look, I don't want to be corny and say Picasso. Maybe I'll say Juan Gris.
Okay.
Because, it would have to be Picasso.
Of course.
I would like, and this is like, you know, them sort of like putting their whole into it, yeah? I'd like Piero della Francesca.
Oh, okay.
I would. I when I was young, I was obsessed with Byzantine art, but especially before they'd got together, like perspective.
Yeah.
And I loved the fact that you had these very beautiful, intricate foregrounds and then the background looked like, you know, So let's say Piero della Francesca. I'd have this is like a sentimental one, but I'd have my dad. He did it every year. He did it every single year, and he always did so well, especially when it used to be secret. He was a really good painter. He was at the Slade, and you know, he was taught by Coldstream, so he was a proper draftsman and proper painter, and his work always did well. And I'd like to have it, you know, another auction with him in it again. And then oh my god, I've got to have some women, because that's all men, which is not good. So hang on a minute. I know, Natalia Gontrova. She had a retrospective in the Tate, and she'd been forgotten. She was a Russian artist that had been forgotten, mainly because of sort of bureaucracy in Russia. And also because her husband, he had a new wife after she died, and she didn't push her work. She pushed his, but not hers. Anyway, she's had a retrospective now, and her work is tremendous. So her. And I know, then in that case I will have Lynette Yidim-Bok. I always say her name wrong again, which is very ignorant of me, but you know who I mean.
I don't.
She's got a show at the Tate at the moment.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And she had one in, I tell you what, she had one in lockdown.
Yeah.
And it was, I think it was the first time I ever saw contemporary black faces in the Tate. And it heralded a year of, you know, Black Lives Matter happened up, lockdown. And it heralded, after that, it was became commonplace to see contemporary. Obviously, I've seen, you know, but a contemporary blackface hanging in an art gallery now is commonplace, and you know, which is a really great thing.
And rightly so. If you wasn't within the arts, Gemma, what do you think you'd like to be?
I'd be a lady of leisure. I mean, I don't know. I can't think of another job I'd like to do particularly, because there isn't really one. I've just it's always been something creative that I've been interested in. But I think I was going to say, could I write scripts? But that would be within the arts, wouldn't it? I would like to just go and visit art galleries, and I would like to go to the gym. That's what I'd like to do. I'd like to have time to go to the gym and go to yoga studios. That's quite a good one, because you'd be out in... I know, I'd be a gardener. I'd be outside and I love gardening. And that's another thing I learned in lockdown.
I was just about to ask if that came about during lockdown.
Hopefully.
Yeah, like myself. I'd never had an interest in it before lockdown.
And suddenly, because you had time to watch things grow, I think it was, and appreciate them growing, and, you know, I think that made the difference for me, really, actually sort of, you know, growing things and watching them. But, yeah, I mean, I used to be allergic to Gardener's Question Time. Whenever it came on, I'd turn it off straight away. But now I listen to it.
Brilliant. Well, that's really quite relevant to what we're talking about, because a charity, just like any subject, the moment you stop and give it a little time, then... yeah, you learn from it and become interested in it.
Yeah, that's why documentary makers are lucky, because they get to learn so much about a difference. They're always immersed in whatever it is they're filming, and they become knowledgeable about so many different things, but they're almost expert because they spend so much time, you know, going around doing, it could be like, you know, filming a documentary about De Beers 1 minute and orphans in Romania.
Try and make a link between those two.
Yeah, exactly.
And could you tell us where people can find what Art on a Postcard do, be it website or social media?
Yeah, it's artonapostcard.com, and we are at Art on a Postcard. We're really easy to find. Just stick in Art on a Postcard wherever and you'll find us. We're not on TikTok, actually. I'm wondering whether we should be, but anyway, we're not. We're on Instagram, very lively on Instagram and Facebook. So, so we're on Instagram. We post up new works every day.
Nice.
Of the auction. And on our website, you can see the whole auction. You can also see we've got lots of prints as well that we've got the whole of the Benin alphabet.
Oh, nice.
That we just got, like, quite recently, just before Christmas.
Yeah.
And we've got lots of, like, really cute Sarah Pope prints.
Wow.
And all sorts of things. So
brilliant.
It's worth a rummage.
And if you could just give us a little rundown of the up and coming dates of the auction. And
it's the 23rd of February till the 9th of March online. It finishes on the 9th. And you can come and see us at the Fitzrovia Gallery.
Brilliant.
In the West End in Fitzrovia the 7th of March at 6 p.m. Okay, so, and we'll have drinks. We're being sponsored by Pink Dixon. I know it sounds crazy, but apparently it's a really lovely wine. And Sandra actually sorted that one out. And it's quite nice. What I would just like to say is that the thing about our auctions is you really will find up and coming artists that for a really low price. And I sort of liken it to, you know, if you live in London in small spaces, which we do, and you want to be a prolific art collector, you can be, because you could have a really amazing collection of small pieces by huge contemporary artists. Now, I know some of them go sort of, you know, into the stratosphere quite quickly. Like we had, yeah, Andrew Cranston last year, his two went for 17,000, but not the case at all with them, you know, with other pieces. So, you know, you can get a contemporary piece of art for less, and it's like, it's good because it democratizes the art world. You know, I've got loads of artists that were in Frieze doing my auction this year. I went to Frieze and I did loads of research and I contacted all the artists, and I've got lots of them doing our auction. So, you know, you can have a slice of those of these huge artists from Frieze for not very much. But I think the other thing is, if you're just an art student, we're interesting, because we really, if you're interested in learning about contemporary art and, you know, new artists, we always have new ones. So we're worth following anyway. So, yeah.
Superb. Well, I think that's all my questions asked, Gemma.
Well, I've really enjoyed it.
Likewise.
Will you come along?
Most definitely. Okay, Gemma, thank you for your time.
You're welcome. Lovely to meet you.
And likewise, have a lovely rest of the day.
Thank you, and you.
See you later.
Bye.
Ta-da. If you've got an exhibition or any other creative project within the arts, or even just want to promote your own artwork, you could do that in podcast form similar to the one you've just listened to. They start at a convenient price point that is comfortable for any artist working on a budget. This podcast itself is created by working artists, and we know how important that is. So to find out more information, you can email us on ministryofartsorg@gmail.com or on Instagram at ministryofartsorg. Ta-da!
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.